I live in Chattanooga now, Tennessee, so you'll have to excuse me if it's a little past my bedtime here, but the Lord will hopefully speak through me and you'll be blessed by what you hear tonight. Before I get into the messages, I don't know how many of you have actually heard of Little Light or some of the work that we do. I work in Christian media. I spent some time in our schools. I was trained in film school. I spent time in Los Angeles working in the television industry. And since then, I came out and I have been using that talent and gift that God has instilled inside of me to win hearts around the world. And so what I want to share with you, the topic always comes up about media. Is there a good use for it? Is there a bad use? How do you tell the difference between something that is good and something that's bad? So what I'm hopefully going to share with you is some principles for you to be able to navigate through what's good and what's bad media. And I just want you to know, I spend 95% of my time creating media. If I thought it was evil, I wouldn't do it. There is a use for it, and I have seen people around the world give their hearts to God because of a DVD that they saw. So there is power in sharing messages, but I also think that the devil is using it to instill his worldview into many of our lives. So that I just want to give you a little backstory before I get into it. How many of you have actually seen a Little Light video? Anyone in here? A number of you. So I'm going to give you a context. Tonight's message, we're going to talk about how does the TV work? Is there anyone in here that has ever thought like this or heard this before? It's just entertainment. I go to church. I read my Bible. I know what it says. I can choose the good from the bad. Is there anyone that's thought that? Anyone? Nobody wants to admit it. I used to think that way, that I know the difference between good and bad, therefore I can choose. So tonight we're going to talk about, are you actually affected by what you see, and how does it actually mechanically work inside of our brains? Let's bow our heads for a word of prayer. Dear gracious Heavenly Father, Lord, I just pray that your Spirit is with us this weekend as we begin to discuss some of these topics that everybody interacts with media, and how do we begin to see what's good, what's bad, how to make the choices between the two. And I just pray, Lord, that whatever is said out of my mouth, may it be from on high, may it be your words, may you hide me behind your cross, and take my own words out of my mouth. We love you, in Jesus' name, amen. I don't know if this got connected here. Can you guys see this? Yep. Okay, perfect. So maybe it works here. So the title of this presentation is called Pseudology, the Art of Lying. Pseudology just means the art of lying. And so we're going to discuss a little bit about this. How is the TV really, truly affecting your brain? I want to read a couple verses to you. Proverbs 23:7 says, as a man thinks in his heart, so he is. Whatever you think is who you are. In fact, what are you taking to heaven with you? Which is made up of your thoughts and your feelings. It is the only thing you get to take to heaven with you. You're not taking your body. You're not taking anything else. So it's very important to understand what affects your character, which is your thoughts and your feelings, right? The Bible also says in 2 Corinthians, this is what God wants from us. He's casting down imaginations on every high thing that exalteth itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought into the obedience of Christ. Every thought. God wants to, and he's promising you that he can change your thinking and your mind. In fact, the Bible says in Romans 12:2, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. What is the will of God? Anyone want to take a step on that? What is the will of God? Remember when someone came and asked Jesus, well, what are the commandments? What's the greatest one? What does he say? Love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. That is the will of God. If you began to look at everything you have in life in context to that relationship, what's it doing with your relationship with God, and what's it doing with your relationship of man? That is what God is asking of us. I want to give you a little background into Mrs. White made a very interesting statement. She says the greatest evidence and power of Christianity that can be presented to the world is a well-ordered, well-disciplined family. This will recommend the truth as nothing else can, for it is a living witness upon the practical power upon the heart. We're all called to be witnesses. You are all called to be witnesses. So what is the greatest witness that you can give to someone else? A well-ordered family, right? So here's how God sets it up. The husband is to be the lawmaker and the priest. All the members of the family center around the father. He is the lawmaker, illustrating in his own manly bearing the sterner virtues, energy, integrity, honesty, patience, courage, diligence, and practical usefulness. The father is, in one sense, the priest of the household, laying upon the altar of God the morning and evening sacrifice. So the priest of the household, if this is how the family is set up, listen to what she says about the woman in the home, the queen of the home. The king upon his throne has no higher work than that of the mother. The mother is the queen of her household. She has in her power the molding of her children's characters, that they may be fitted for a higher immortal life. The angel could not ask for a higher mission. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? The father is the priest of the household, but then listen, the mother has not a higher position in that little unit, that family unit. An angel couldn't even ask for that high of a mission, is what she says. Here's how it is set up. If the father's the priest of the household, basically this is how it works in human psychology. The imprint of the character comes from the father. Your sexuality, your character, and who you are is imprinted from the father. The mother's job is to instill those values into the child. And if the children do what the Bible says in Ephesians 6, 1 through 3, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, that it may go well with you, that you may live long in the land. This is the family unit that God set up. If you abide by the rules that God has set up this family unit. Listen to what she says. She says it's an Adventist home. If the marriage vows have been promised to be as one, the wife covenanting to love and obey her husband, and the husband promising to love and cherish his wife, if the law of God is obeyed, the demon of strife is kept out of the family. Do you know that it is impossible for the devil to get inside of your home if you abide by the rules that God has set up? Impossible! But what do we all have in our homes? We have this little thing inside of our homes that gives us a window into the world. And what is that window teaching everybody? Look at this. This is an American use of time. This came from a study where they wanted to know, what do Americans do with their time? So if you'll notice right here, this purple is how much people sleep. They sleep about 6 hours a night. They work about 5.75 hours a night, and the rest of their day is made up of leisure time, which is about 4 hours out of the day. And I want you to notice this. This little tiny pink sliver right here is religious and civil activities 20 minutes out of the day. Now I want you to think about this. If the average person spends 4 hours a day watching television or playing video games and 20 minutes a day reading their Bible, who has your attention? Who's your teacher? There's an imbalance right now of what people are doing with their time. How easy is it to pop in that movie and watch a two-hour movie? Very easy, right? How hard is it to sit there and study your Bible for 2 hours? That's hard. So this is what's gaining a lot of attention. Now, I'm going to play a little commercial for you that came out. Hopefully, you guys can hear this. There is audio here. Here's a little commercial that came out that talks a little bit about the television. Can you hear that? Oh, you know what? We're playing through VGA, aren't we? How about a mic here? If I just grab this orange one, hopefully it'll reach. Maybe. Scooch this over. Okay, I'll play it like this. Oops.
Concern I had was...
Wait, sorry. I touched it.
Hello, Earth. I'm Alec Baldwin, TV star. You know, they say TV will rot your brain. That's absurd. TV only softens the brain like a ripe banana. You know, the next time someone says TV rots your brain, laugh. Laugh hard.
That laughter will force our televised intoxicants deep into your cerebellum, slowly rotting it into a quivering blob of tapioca.
Your parents were right, your teachers were right, even that creepy scoutmaster with the tight brown shorts was right. TV is slowly rotting your brain and turning it into a slimy, gooey, mushy blob of pudding, and there's nothing you can do about it. See? I just told you what was happening, and you're still watching TV. Amazing.
I'm Eliza Dushku, star of the new show Dollhouse. It's a potent blend of twisty plot lines and insane action that'll keep your eyes glued and your brain rotting as your high school...
Give me a second. Sure. Oh, now he's got to run back there. So I'll tell you what they're saying. He's basically saying your mother and everybody's telling you to turn off the TV, that the TV is actually rotting your brain. Don't listen to them. Because we know that the TV's rotting your brain and it helps us get our message across. And the message that they want to get across is in their little slogan at the end of...
The sooner we can slurp them through your ear canals and pass them through our lower intestines. Because we're aliens. And that's what we do.
Hulu, an evil plot to destroy the world. Enjoy.
Hulu, an evil plot to destroy the world. Enjoy. So this was... The first introduction that Hulu was coming out into the world, they put this commercial on during the Super Bowl. It was during the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl, and it was a Super Bowl that was very close in the score of the game. So they did not put it on in the middle of the night when no one would watch it. They put it on at one of the highest times that anyone would ever watch TV. And it's amazing, just like the actor Dennis Leary says, we can tell you exactly what the TV's doing to you, and guess what? You're still gonna go home and watch it. Amazing. That's the power that Hollywood knows they have. By the way, when they put this commercial out, overnight, their company, Hulu, doubled by 60% overnight because of one commercial. So the power that advertising has, make no mistake, brothers and sisters, they would not spend advertising money and millions of dollars for seconds of video if it didn't work. That would not make sense. So I took a look at this and I said, I really want to know, is the TV really have a damaging activity to the brain? So we started looking at what does the TV do to a child's mind? So we found a neurologist and child psychologist who studied what happens in your brain when you watch TV, and specifically with children, and we asked him the question, is there damaging things with the TV and young kids? And this is what he has to say.
The concern I had was that exposing the developing brain to the rapid sequencing of television programs, particularly baby DVDs, which are more rapidly sequenced even than normal television, would precondition the mind to expect high levels of input. And that would lead to shorter attention spans later in life. Reality couldn't, if you will, keep pace with the expectations that had been created by watching too much fast-paced programming later in life. And we found just that the more television that babies watched before the age of three, the more likely they were to have attention problems later in life. Specifically, for each hour that they watched on a typical day, before the age of three, their chances of having attentional problems were increased by about 10%. So to put that another way, a baby who watched 2 hours of TV a day before the age of three would be 20% more likely to have attentional problems at age seven compared to a child who watched.
So I'll kind of re-highlight what he said. If a child watches in between the ages of 2 and 3 years old television, for every hour out of the day that he watches television, he has a 10% higher chance of having attention problems later on in life. And what do we have the biggest problem in our schools today? Kids paying attention, right? So the more TV you watch, they have found a direct link, the more attention problems you will have later on in life. So I'll give you a little example of why this is the way that it is. This is my son. He's now 6 years old, so this was quite a few years ago. And notice, if you've ever observed a young child, they put things in their mouth, they feel, they taste, they touch the world around them. And there's a reason for this. When you are born with the opportunity for billions and billions of neurological connections. In fact, your mind can make more neurological connections at your birth than you can at any other time in your life. It is the reason why you can give a 5-year-old child the ability to learn 5 different languages. You try learning 5 different languages. How is it that a young child can learn it real fast and you've been on this planet for a whole lot longer and you can't do it? What makes the difference? God designed us this way. You have all these neurological connections that you can make. So inside your brain, you have these pathways that are formed in between these connections. You have an axon, which is where the connection is, and you have a myelin sheath that goes over the axon, and it strengthens the connection, meaning the more times that a pathway goes over that connection, that myelin sheath protects that connection. Now, an interesting thing happens when you're about 12 years old. Your brain releases an enzyme that dissolves all poorly myelinated connections. So, like the saying says, if you don't use it, you what? Because what happens inside your brain is your brain trims whatever pathways are not made. So if you train a young child pathways of not paying attention, it strengthens that, and then when they get older, their brain prunes the brain, and that strengthens that pathway, and they have problems their whole life. That's why it's important not to let young children in the ages of 2 to 3 watch television. You ever heard of baby Einstein videos? It's supposed to make your baby smarter, right? So here he's going to talk about baby Einstein.
Which brings us to baby Einstein. Now, many of you probably have not seen baby Einstein, but I will show you a random 20-second clip from baby Einstein Day on the Farm, and here it is. In that 20-second clip, there were 7 scene changes, about 1 every 3 seconds. It's about the most exhausting day on the farm since John Steinbeck's Grapes of Wrath. And of course, it's nothing like being on a real farm, right? Adults watching this find it discombobulating because your mind is trying to make a coherent narrative out of this, and there is no coherent narrative. It jumps all over the place. But babies aren't trying to make a coherent narrative out of it. They're not capable of doing that. It's all of that screen change, all of that stimulation that's keeping them actually engaged in the screen. So we've had for a while what we call the overstimulation hypothesis, which is that prolonged exposure to this rapid image change during this critical window of brain development would precondition the mind to expect high levels of input, and that would lead to inattention in later life.
So I want to give it to you like this. The secondary danger that's happening here is if you watch a lot of TV or you play video games or you have these very exciting things that happen in your life, right? What happens is you train the brain to want excitement. Then all of a sudden, you have a pastor that comes and speaks to you one day of the week, and he's not changing colors, he's not blowing up, there's not music behind him. All he's doing is reading from a book. You know what your brain does? This is boring. This doesn't make sense to me. Because you have trained your brain to want excitement and not want to just listen to someone speak. Does that make sense? Look it up on the internet. There's tons of articles. Babies shouldn't watch TV. Babies shouldn't watch TV. There's all kinds of articles. If you have young children in your life, thinking about having young children, someday you'll have young children, you should know this. Be careful, because you train your children to have bad media habits. The American Pediatric Society says children under 2 should never watch television ever. Not 3ABN, not Hope Channel, not nothing. Don't do it, because you train the child's brain in a bad way. When they get older, there's actually studies that say there's actually positive things. France bans television shows aimed at babies. It's illegal to produce a show in France aimed at a child that's young. Why? Because they know what it does to the child. And trust me, France is not doing this because of religious reasons. They know how the brain works. There's another thing that's going on that's very interesting. When you see a child mimic his parents, it's because of this thing that we all have in our brains called mirror neurons. And so here this guy is going to talk a little bit about what neurons do. They're associated with learning.
This is brand new science. This is just out of the lab. We may have some special circuitry in our brains that helps us whenever we look at each other. Well, as it happens, scientists have an explanation for this strange ability to connect. It's new. And it began entirely by accident at a laboratory in the lovely old city of Parma, Italy, where a group of brain researchers was working with monkeys. And they were testing a neuron, that's a brain cell, that always fired, made this sound, yeah, whenever the monkey would grab for a peanut. So the lab had all these peanuts around, and whenever the monkey made its move, the neuron would fire. Scientists thought, now here's a neuron that is essential to motion. It's a motor neuron. Then one day, the monkey was just sitting around, not moving at all, just sitting, when a human scientist came into the lab. And when that scientist grasped the peanut, yeah, the monkey's cell fired. Now, the monkey hadn't moved. It was the human that had moved, suggesting that this neuron up here couldn't tell the difference between seeing something and doing something. Seeing and doing were the same. Or more intriguingly, that for this neuron, watching somebody do something is just like doing it yourself.
So I want you to think about what he's saying. What they found out is you have these neurons inside of your brain that are associated with learning. They found it out by accident. When the monkey would watch someone do something, his brain would fire as if he was doing it himself. So then that led him into a study. Inside of your brain, when you watch somebody do something, your neurological mirror neurons fire as if you're doing it yourself. Think about it. How many of you have ever watched a bank robbery movie? Anyone? How about something that you knew you shouldn't watch that was a sinful act? Because you see, the devil is brilliant. He's created a device where we go, it's not me sinning. I'm just watching him. I didn't do that. He did it. I'm watching. But you know what? When you watch neurologically to your brain, it's as if you're doing it yourself. He explains it like this. He puts people in an fMRI machine and shows how this neurologically works.
To demonstrate, he put me into this very powerful fMRI brain scanner that can peer into the brain while it's working. And he gave me some goggles so he could show me pictures when I was in there.
So you can see here the eyeball of Robert.
And once he had a good view into my brain...
Nice looking brain.
Thank you.
Robert, you're not supposed to talk when we scan you, all right?
Sorry. Then he said, okay, I'm going to show you a bunch of faces. And for each face, I want you to imitate it. So I did that. Then he recorded my brain while I moved my facial muscles.
We're going to do right away another one.
Okay. Then he said, okay, same faces, but this time, don't move a muscle. Just look. So I looked. When we check the results, oh, there's my brain. I've never seen my brain before.
This is your mirror.
Iacoboni says that the part of my brain that's working when I make a face, the same part gets busy when I see the face.
So all he had to do was look at the face, and in his brain, it's as if he was making that same facial expression. Brothers and sisters, be careful what you watch. Be careful what you let in front of your eyes. The Bible tells us in Matthew 5:21, ye have heard him said of time of old, that thou shalt not kill, that whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment. But I say unto you that whosoever is angry with his brother without cause shall be in danger of that judgment. We know that it's not necessarily just the act of killing that causes that judgment. It's something that happens inside of the brain. And here Jesus illustrates it even further. Matthew 5:28 says, but I say unto you that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her have committed adultery already in her heart. You don't have to go through with the act of adultery. All you got to do is look at it and lust in your heart. So it begs the question. I took a couple screenshots of a couple movies that were out recently. This one is called Permission. And this is what it says. It has a boy and a girl in bed together, and it says, how can you be certain he's the one if he's the only one? So question, what is that going to teach you? Maybe you need to try this one and this one and this one. There's nothing about a committed marriage relationship with that. Here's another one that I just took another screenshot of that came out recently called Act of Violence. Doesn't the Bible kind of have something to say about violence? You don't even have to look at the movie and watch the trailer and go into it. All you got to do is look at the title of these nowadays, and you could know, you know what? I'm sure my Bible has a lot to say about that, right? Here's another one called Den of Thieves. Doesn't the Bible talk something about there's a thief? Romans 1:32 says this. Who knowing the judgment of God, they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do that. This is what Paul is getting at here. He's saying, listen, if you kill someone, you are in danger of judgment of killing. But he goes further than that, and he says, if you take pleasure in somebody killing somebody, you're in danger of that same judgment. And if you think about the different movies that you've seen over the course of your life, over and over again, it's breaking the law of God again and again and again. So think about this. This is Dr. Neil Nedley. He talks a lot about the brain. He's a behavioral scientist who studies mostly depression. So he's going to talk a little bit about the function of the frontal lobe.
The frontal lobe of the brain is the seat of spirituality, morality, and the will. It's actually the analytical portion of our brain, and it's actually the decision maker. And so it's a crucial aspect in regards to our future success and happiness is how well our frontal lobe is functioning. And unfortunately, entertainment television suppresses the frontal lobe of the brain. Actually, in about 90 seconds of viewing it, the frontal lobe circulation begins to go down, and it actually has an adverse effect. And you know, the interesting thing is people watch entertainment television often due to the fact that they feel a little depressed or anxious, and it kind of calms them. But in reality, it's a very short-term fix, and it's going to complicate things in the long run. Of course, I'm most known for the one who treats depression and anxiety. In fact, we treat the most severe forms of depression and anxiety. And what we have found is virtually every depressed patient will have about a 40% decrease in circulation and activity of the frontal lobe of the brain.
So here, this is interesting. This is what Dr. Neil Nedley's saying. What happens when you sit down and you watch television is within 20 to 40 seconds, the blood flow in the frontal lobe begins to slow down. You begin to stop having that blood flow in the front. And they found a correlation that if you are depressed, you want blood flow to the frontal lobe. That's what helps a depressed patient. Now look at this. Here's a couple articles for you. This one comes from NPR, the National Public Radio. Does binge watching make us depressed? Do you ever heard of binge watching television shows? People watch a whole season sitting down in one little swoop. Look at what they say here. Netflix and other streaming media services have become the crack of television, making it possible to watch an entire season of shows, House of Cards, The Orange is the New Black, in one go. It seems harmless fun, but recent headlines suggest that our binge-watching habits could be making us depressed and miserable. Over and over again, they are finding article after article that when you binge watch television shows, there is a direct link with depression. And our depression in our world is skyrocketing. And so all of a sudden, people watch more and more because they want to get out into an escape mode to get away from the depression. But the problem is, like any drug, it keeps you there and you get more and more depressed. Here's something that happens inside the brain. You have a left side of the brain and a right side of the brain. Your left side of the brain is a critical, analytical, logical side of the brain where it thinks about all the information. The right side of your brain is your artistic, dreamy, and emotional side of the brain. And what they found out that when you watch television, because there's an incredible amount of information coming into your brain at once, that your brain cannot process all that information at once. So what happens is it ceases from the left side and kicks over to the right side of your brain and allows all that information to come in without you critically thinking about it. How many of you have ever seen a 3D movie? Anyone? Okay, did you type into the internet what happens inside my brain when I watch a 3D movie before you went and watched a 3D movie? How many of you did that? Nobody. Well, I did. Actually, I've never seen a 3D movie in the theater. They came out after I stopped watching movies. But listen to this. I typed in the internet what happens in your brain when you watch 3D movies. Look at what it says. This comes from Dr. Michael Rich, who is at the Children's Hospital in Boston, and this is what he says happens inside of your brain. When you're sitting in the theater looking at a giant screen wearing a 3D glasses and swimming with surround sound and processing 24 images that flip by per second, your brain dutifully processes those stimuli and does little else. In fact, your prefrontal cortex, which is involved with impulse control and future thinking and moral choices, is basically inactivated during that process. Basically saying, that's why you get lost in a movie. It's like when you go into a movie, it's completely taking a key and turning off your frontal lobe. Off. Off. Why is that important? Where do I speak to God? Do I speak to God in my hand? Do I speak to God in my foot? No, I speak to God in my mind. Where specifically in my mind? Oh, that's kind of interesting, don't you think? That's kind of interesting to me that you will sit in a dark room and you open up your mind as wide as you can open it. You cannot think about the information that's coming in and you turn off your ability to talk to God. Wow. See, people don't realize scientifically we know what happens inside the brain. When you watch television, your brain gets stuck in alpha brainwave pattern. It's not a bad brainwave pattern. But the uniqueness about the brainwave in alpha is that it does not critically analyze information. It just soaks it in. Beta is where you think about the information and make decisions about it. So alpha, you just open your mind, and this is the state that your mind is in. I found this interesting article. Nicki Minaj and Lil Wayne were awarded Teachers of the Year Award. How many of you knew they were teachers? No? You better bet they're teachers. They're 100% teachers. Listen to this. This is why the state of Florida gave them Best Female Teacher and Best Male Teacher of the Year after deeming them more influential than teachers who actually commit themselves to the children's education. Children are more affected by the celebrities than teachers. They spend 8 hours a day every single day. You better bet they're teachers. So what are they teaching us? That's the question. Here's something I found that was interesting. Time magazine, Taylor Swift, she, in this article from Time, she's speaking about her fans that pay attention to her music. Listen to the words that she uses. She's happy to minister to them. I think it's kind of an interesting choice of words. They're discovering how music tells them how they're going to live their lives and how they should feel and how it's acceptable to feel. I think that's kind of exciting. You see, every single celebrity and every single person that is out there realizes that when they put a piece of art out there, it is meant to affect you. Art is meant to affect you. You take any art class in school, nobody does art to not affect anyone. The purpose of art is to affect people. But yet, in the church, we say, this doesn't affect me. I know the truth. I can watch whatever I want to watch. Has no bearing on my life whatsoever. I hope that you guys are kind of understanding a little bit about how the mind works. And celebrities are a big proponent to influencing us. Time magazine said, celebrity worship, is it good for your health? Listen to this. They said in the article that it is a good thing because people form bonds in their minds with their favorite celebrities and are able to assimilate the celebrities' characteristics in themselves. This is 100% true. If you like Brad Pitt and you watch Brad Pitt's movies and you want to focus on Brad Pitt's life, the more you want to become like Brad Pitt. The more I focus on Jesus Christ, who do I want to become like? The more I read about Jesus, the more I have a relationship with Jesus. It's a simple thing of where are you putting your time. If you can honestly answer this question, I spend more time with Jesus than I do things on the TV, then that's who you're going to be like. Does that make sense? So here is plenty of articles that talk about this. Do you guys remember a movie called Anchorman? Anyone? It was kind of a funny comedy one. This is the main actor, Will Ferrell. He played he played a newscaster in this movie called Anchorman. The reason I'm showing you this is because I want to show you something. He did a Dodge commercial, and in the Dodge commercial, he told you how many sandwiches you could fit into the glove box. Listen to this. The sales to the car. Oops, I skipped out of this. The sales to the car went up 40%. They told you nothing about the function of the car. They didn't tell you how it drives. They didn't tell you the gas mileage. They told you nothing about it other than you could fit 563 sandwiches in the glove box. If you don't think you're affected by what you watch, we can prove to you because of the advertising industry. They spend billions of dollars worldwide on trying to affect you, and they know it works. How many of you have ever bought soaps and things from Target called Method? You ever seen that? Method soaps? Next time you're in your Target, you might want to notice this. This is one of the creators of Method Soaps marketing campaign.
Part of marketing is about creating emotional responses. And I mean, that's the whole idea of art, right? It's why you go to a museum. It's why art influences, inspires us. And applying that to marketing is something we've always thought, you know, very heavily about. It's about bringing design, bringing emotion and creativity and passion.
So he says when he designs these soaps, the way to sell the soap to you is by putting creative design in it because he wants to affect you emotionally, okay? Here's another guy who writes for a business magazine, and he talks about the art of selling something. How do you sell something to someone? You appeal to their emotions.
Wait, who in this room has ever bought something they didn't really need? Yeah? Okay, some people have got two hands up. So you're standing in front of it and you're going, I don't need it, can't afford it, it's not practical, and you walk out with it. Why? Because of the emotion it makes you feel to buy it. My favorite business writer, and I'm sure some of you share this, is a guy called Tom Peters. Now, I was reading an interview he did with an executive from Harley Davidson. So he's interviewing their top executive. And he said halfway through the interview, yeah, but you just sell motorbikes. And the executive said, Tom, you have missed the point. He said, we don't sell motorbikes. And Tom Peters says, well, what do you sell? He said, we sell the ability for a 43-year-old accountant to dress in black leather, drive through a small country town, and have people be afraid of him. He said, we sell an emotion. We sell a feeling. He said, if you use logic to buy a motorbike, you'd buy a Japanese one because they're awesome. He said, you buy a Harley because of how it feels, not how logically you think.
All marketing is selling to your emotions, all of it. The best way to sell to somebody is emotions. So everything that has an emotional attachment causes a greater response in us. How many of you have heard of subliminal advertising? Right? So there is an example of subliminal advertising. You've heard the term sex sells, right? How many of you have seen this image before? How many of you do not see? There's something sexual about this picture. Anybody not see it? You don't see it? Look in between the birds and the bees. There is the word sex written in the flowers. If you turn your face away, and I take it away, you will always see the word sex written in the flowers. This is an example of subliminal advertising. Your mind is incredibly intelligent and it picks these things up. Here's an example in real life of them using this tactic. How many of you see it? It's kind of super Captain Obvious. There's the word sex written out. How about this one? If you've ever seen Axe soap, there is an S, an E, and an X, an S, an E, and an X, but then notice there's no S here, but at the top of this one, it says you get 33% more what? Bubbles? What does the girl have anything to do with the soap? She doesn't have anything to do with the soap, but what they're doing is they're appealing to your sexual button, your emotional system. Why do they sell a car with a beautiful girl? What does the beautiful girl have anything to do with the function of the car? Does she make it drive better? Does it get better gas mileage if she gets in there? What is the purpose of selling a car with a beautiful girl? What they're doing is pushing your sexual button. So what this is called is oxytocin. It's releasing oxytocin in your brain. Now, oxytocin is this little hormone that is released when a woman has given birth to a child, and she forms a bond with that child. So we went and spoke to a neuroeconomist out here in Loma Linda, California, who actually studied oxytocin, and Hollywood industry had come out to him and used his research because they wanted to release oxytocin better when people would watch their commercials. So he's going to talk about that.
Discovered that this hormone called oxytocin facilitates trust between strangers. Because when someone trusts you, your brain releases this and it motivates you to reciprocate, to be trustworthy. So this led us into a variety of studies where we both measured and manipulated oxytocin in the human brain to figure out why we had so much trust between strangers. So since we've done that, we've started looking at trust in other things, like in people you don't know, politicians, the government, advertisers. So for advertising, we asked this question, which is, why are there puppies in toilet paper commercials? Puppies don't use toilet paper, they have nothing to do with toilet paper, unless you're really out of toilet paper, you might use the puppy. So what's going on with that? So we all know intuitively that advertisers want to grab our emotions. They want to engage us in this product. They want us to trust them, to trust this product. So we started thinking that maybe this has something to do with oxytocin. So let me describe an experiment we ran to test that. So we had an experiment where we had people view public service advertisements, like don't drive drunk, here's what can happen to you. And we put half the people in the experiment on oxytocin and half on placebo. So we can infuse oxytocin into your brain through your nose, and oxytocin will get into your brain. What we found is that when oxytocin was raised, that is when you're in this trusting state, this empathic state, people did say they cared about the people in the commercials more. And more tellingly to me, when we gave them an option to donate money to these different causes, people on oxytocin donated more of their own money that they earned for this experiment to these particular causes. So it seems like advertisers have figured out how to get our brains to release oxytocin and make us trust, want, identify with their project.
So, does anybody remember that commercial? Do you remember that little commercial with the little kids in the space and the little fuzzy animals and stuff? I'll tell you why they just showed you what they showed you. Maybe perhaps many of you did not catch the subliminal advertising that was shown in that commercial. The little boy was driving around with his parents and he said, "Mommy and Daddy, where do babies come from?" And all of a sudden the parents went, like, oh no, I have to have this conversation with my kid, right? So then they start to explain about how babies get inside of a rocket ship and then the rocket ship takes off. Brothers and sisters, that's very sexual in nature. And that was a car commercial that they put out in the public. And most people, goes right over the tops of your heads, sort of. Your brain is very intelligent and it picks those things up subliminally. And you understand there's constant sexual bombardment in these kind of commercials. So here's an example. They also use hypnosis in commercials a lot. Here's an example of them using hypnosis in a cell phone commercial.
You deserve Virgin Mobile, but something in your brain is afraid to switch. It's time to retrain your brain. Retrain your brain.
Virgin Mobile.
All the phones you want. Get one. Great.
So, how much of this made sense? Not much of it, right? There's a reason why they do this. How many commercials have you ever been watching and you go, man, this is so ridiculous. It does not make any sense whatsoever. I'll tell you something about the human brain that I did not know before we started working on this project. I went and interviewed a hypnotherapist because I had heard that they use hypnosis in commercials, but I don't know anything about hypnosis at all. So I wanted to know, how does it work? What's going on? And the one thing that he said is the brain does not like to be confused. It doesn't like confusion at all. And this is how a form of hypnosis happens. So here is this hypnotherapist that we interviewed, and listen to what he says about how hypnosis works.
What they'll do with hypnosis, and this is where people become susceptible to it, is they'll overwhelm you with information. So you look at a commercial, and you see all this information that comes all in at one time. And you see this goofy stuff, and you go like, what is going on there? So what you've just done now is go into a questioning part of your mind. You've got a ton of new information and you're trying to figure out what it is. So they want to get you into an emotion. You think about the commercial. Does the commercial get you an emotion? Not really. They rely on the TV show to get you into the emotion. The cliffhanger, they go right to break and you go, oh wow, I can't wait. It's going to be over. The commercial comes on. You're in state, Pavlov's dog, remember, ringing the bell, the dog salivating, and then all of a sudden they got this new information that comes in. And the information is meant in to get you into using that state that you're now in, that curiosity, that cliffhanger, that anxiety, so to speak, of what's going to happen next, and associate their product with.
So here's kind of a classic example of how hypnosis works right here. Why did you just hold your hand out and shake my hand? I didn't tell you to shake my hand. But see, what happens is inside of everybody's brain, we have computer programs that operate automatically. And the computer program that she was operating off of was when somebody holds their hand out, the courteous thing to do is to shake their hand. So I did not have to give her a verbal command. All I had to do was show her the sign, and her brain went, oh, okay, he wants to shake my hand. And she shook my hand. How a hypnosis person would take a hold of your mind is if I were to hold my hand out like this and she was to hold her hand out and I were to go sleep, now I confused her. The brain does not like to be confused. So when it's confused, it goes, wait, what just happened? I didn't catch what happened. And then when it skips that computer program, that's when a command can be given and someone can take hold of the mind. They do this over and over and over again in commercials. They show you confusing information and then your brain goes, well, that doesn't make any sense. And then it's like they show you their product. Oh, I got it. They're literally hypnotizing your mind with their product. And then that's why they also have a jingle at the end of all these commercials. Southwest, you're free to move about the country. Ding. Taco Bell, think of outside the bun. Dong. They're bringing you in and out of a state of hypnosis and showing you their product and snapping a picture of it. So there's this other thing that's also going on called neuro-linguistic programming. You can change someone's mind based on the words that you use. So this guy right here, he sat down with this guy and he said, I want you to think about whatever present you want in your life. Write it down on a piece of paper, put it in your pocket. So that's what the guy did. He wrote it down, put it in his pocket. And then he said, I'm going to change your mind using words.
walk into a shop and you see something that you know you have to have, mm-hmm. what is that feeling like? Describe it for me.
I guess it's quite sort of sudden, and you sort of you have a definite positivity about it, and often you'll go away and see other things, but then you come back to the thing you saw first. And
excellent. It's like, you know. Well, just take that feeling and just sort of amplify it a bit for me, because it is a really good feeling. It's okay. Important to understand that feeling of positivity that sure. you describe. Okay.
I want you to notice something real quick, too. All hypnosis deals with emotions. How they change you is deal with emotions. So notice how he said, how does that make you feel? And then he's going to change his mind.
Very nice to meet you, and thank you for coming on the show. Let me explain to you how I buy gifts or presents for people, all right? And this is the best way to handle, bar none, the problem of, you know, what to settle for when you're going to buy gifts for somebody that's a little bit difficult to buy for, all right? Now, what I do is, rather than recycle the same sort of two tired bottles of wine or box of chocolates, which are no fun to receive, I go out and I buy anything, and then I make that person fall in love with it, all right, by creating a strong feeling of desire for that object. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. And it absolutely works. They get all sort of pumped up, you know, they get that feeling of that positivity you were describing. They beam excitement for it. And, you know, it's a win-win thing, because they get a present that they love, and, you know, I get rid of some stuff out the back of my kitchen cupboard or whatever. What I want you to really understand about this is that that feeling is so strong, can be so extreme, that it can replace the memory of what they actually wanted. So even though 2 days before they may have said, I want X, whatever that is, you know, like a really nice car, like a BM or an Xbox or something like that, something they really wanted, suddenly now they think they always wanted what I got them. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Excellent. Cool. Good. So, you can have anything you like. What's your dream present?
A BMX bike.
So then he tells him to pull out his piece of paper in his pocket and see what he wrote on it, and it wasn't a BMX bike.
I'm genuinely a bit freaked out, in a nice way. I came in here thinking, if I can suss this out, if there's some kind of thing going on that you know, I can work out logically, I'm going to play along. But I'm stunned. That's definitely my right, and that's my J. And I've got no need for a leather jacket, and I don't know what's going on.
So he wrote on there that he wanted a leather jacket. And then he was really confused, because he said, no, I wanted a BMX bike. And the guy said, no, I changed your mind. And he said, no, I really wanted a BMX bike. And he said, but you wrote on there you wanted a leather jacket. We have the technology to be able to change people's minds using words only. But what if somebody wanted to use the movies to influence you? So in this particular movie, they put a frame into the movie that said you're going to forget the film that you're just watching. And he wanted to see if people would actually forget the movie that they just watched.
Can I have a look at where it says forget the film over the girl with the rose in her hair? I think that's a frame too long. Can we get that down to one frame?
Let's see how that works.
This is the Genesis Cinema in East London, which kindly agreed to include our ad amongst the trailers for a screening of Ocean's 12, a carefully chosen film which, if the ad works, the audience will not be able to remember. Not a bad thing. For legal reasons, patrons were told that some filming would happen, but our cameras were hidden in dark corners and people had no idea of the experiment.
So then he filmed the people coming out of the movie theater to see if they forgot the film that they just watched.
Our cinema audience has now watched the film after absorbing my special ad. We stopped them on their way out to see what they could remember.
Why don't you tell me about the film you just saw?
Doesn't help that she's drinking.
It's a bit weird.
So how often do you go to film?
Don't get much, about once a month.
Is there a particular genre you like or don't like?
I like foreign movies.
Uh-huh. But
yeah,
this one you...
And I don't remember anything about the movie.
It's about a heist that goes wrong. And then it comes together because the guy's got a contact with his mother.
If I try to picture the actual scene, I see like a sieve. That's going to sound even more slight. Just a sieve.
I remember the whole film, yeah, whole thing, yeah. Wicked, awesome film.
I can only remember, like, casually, like, going into the cinema, and then, like, when we came out, my mind just went blank, and I don't know why.
I can't remember anything.
So basically, not everyone forgot the film, but some of them did. Now, it's an interesting experiment because what if some filmmaker wanted to put things into films that you didn't think you necessarily caught? Now, remember what I told you about the frontal lobe? In about 20 seconds, the blood flow starts to go away. Here's an actual fMRI study of the brain of somebody watching a trailer. This particular trailer is the trailer for the movie, Alice in Wonderland. And so as Alice in Wonderland, the trailer just starts, and as she looks and peers down the hole and falls down the hole, I want you to notice what happens in the blood flow in the frontal lobe. As she hits the bottom of the floor, you're probably at about 20 seconds or so that the person is watching this. And as they start to get to be around 30 seconds, I want you to notice how the blood flow starts going and going and going away until the activity in the frontal lobe is no more. We physically know what happens in the brain when you watch TV. Now, when I was in college, there was a movie called Fight Club that was a very popular film that came out. And I had watched this movie a lot of times. And I was a Seventh-day Adventist Christian, and I had grown up in the church, read my Bible, and I was pretty shocked when I saw this. And so when I woke up and saw what they had said about God, we gave this presentation a number of years ago, and I asked this audience that was, you'll see here in a second, at one of our universities, where all of them are at a Seventh-day Adventist college. All of them probably come from Seventh-day Adventist homes. And I asked the question, where in this movie do they talk about God? I want you to see how many people could answer the question.
I want to ask a quick question. I have seen this movie probably 20 times, maybe more. This was one of my favorite films. How many people in this room have seen this movie? Look at how many hands just went up. Can somebody tell me in this movie where they speak about God? You got one person. What scene? One person. All of you people raised your hand, and only one person told me when they talk about God.
So out of a room full of 400 to 600 people, half, if not more than half, had seen this movie. Not more than one person could remember the scene where they speak about God. And here's what was said about God.
Our fathers were models for God. If our fathers failed, what does that tell you about God?
No,
listen to me. You have to consider the possibility that God does not like you, never wanted you. In all probability, he hates you. This is not the worst thing that can happen.
It is.
We don't need him.
We don't like, we
damnation, man. Redemption. We are God's unwanted children, so be it! Listen, you can run water over your hand to make it worse, or look at me, or you can use vinegar to neutralize the burn.
Please let me have it, please!
First, you have to give up. First, you have to know, not fear, know that someday you're gonna die.
You don't know how this feels!
It's only after we've lost everything that we're free to do anything.
There's a couple things I want you to notice about this. Number one, it's a highly emotional scene. What did I tell you is emotions doing to you, or what part do emotions play in changing your mind? If I want to sell something to you, the greatest way for me to sell it to you is by appealing to your emotions. If I want to hypnotize you, I need to hypnotize you by changing you and appealing to your emotions. Why do you watch the movies that you like to watch? Because they give you an emotional rush. So when you have an emotional rush, it's a greater impact. And if they tell you in the movie that God does not like you, in all probability, he hates you. But guess what? We don't need God. Forget him. How can that be said to a room full of Seventh-day Adventist Christians and only one person caught it? That's the power that this media has on our lives. as we go through some of these things over this weekend, I hope you think about this. Because I know how attractive some of these movies and films and television and video games and things can be in your life. They are extremely fun for a short time. But when you take a look through the lens of your Bible, you will begin to see that a lot of times what Hollywood is teaching you is opposite of what this is teaching you. So I hope that you can open your eyes and let some of these messages penetrate into your hearts. And may we all be ready when Jesus comes again. Let's bow our heads for a word of prayer. Dear gracious Heavenly Father, thank you for getting me here safely. Thank you for this time.